Welcome everyone to our finale podcast. We're going to be talking, of course, about the season 7 finale today. I just have Gail with me. Ashley is, I think, a little bit homelanded out. So it's just going to be the two of us today talking about the finale. And then I expect in a little bit we'll have kind of a season wrap-up episode, and Ashley will join for that. But this episode was structured kind of in three parts. So I think that's gonna that's kind of how we're gonna chop up the discussion today. Beginning with kind of that first part, which is like the first 20 minutes of the episode, which kind of picks up, I guess, where episode 11 left off. Before we kind of dive into that, I guess, what were your overall thoughts about the episode, Gail?
You know, there was a little too much Keen for me. I wanted more Carrie, mm-hmm. but in looking back, like after the episode was over, that was my immediate reaction. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, letting it sit for a little while, and then I watched it again later that night. I understand it now. They were wrapping her up, and they were trying to say something about the bigger picture here in our own country, and they were trying to, you know, put a button on that. So I thought it was really interesting, the parallels between these two women and all the choices, mm-hmm. and how they ultimately ended the season. For me, I feel like the season culminating in this episode, like we were talking last episode, like, you know, were they going to be able to land this thing? Could they bring it home and maintain that great season status that we all kind of felt? And for me, I think it did. So I think the ending of the episode obviously was hard to swallow. But for me, like, I have found a bit of a peace in it, because I feel like Carrie is just such a hero. And who she is at her core is a patriot, and someone who was always willing to die for her country. And so I think there's a beauty in that. So for me, I wasn't my favorite of the episodes this season, but I like how they wrapped up multiple storylines.
Yeah. I had like kind of a weird relationship with this episode when I first watched it on Sunday night. Well, first of all, you'd watched it before us, mm-hmm. and you like kind of, I don't know, about an hour before the episode was set to air on the East Coast, you had already finished it, and you were like, I didn't like it. And then, you know, I asked specifically, you know, how's it gonna be for me? And you were like, Sarah's not gonna be okay with this. And that like freaked me out a lot. So I mean, and before that, like the entire weekend, I was feeling totally fine, which is in complete contrast to kind of how I felt the past few years, you know, before a finale. I had the same initial impression as you after the episode. I thought that there was way too much Keen and not enough of the Carrie storyline, and the ending, you know, the 7 months later part, I was like disgusted with. And I was feeling really sad about it. I had kind of like a meltdown on Sunday night after the episode. And we'll talk about that later. We'll get to it later. I rewatched it again on Monday morning, and kind of after, you know, a good night's sleep, I felt a lot better about it. And I thought that the episode was much better on rewatch than it was kind of on the initial airing. And I found myself a lot more engaged and a lot more interested in the Keen scenes. And so that's a major component of like the middle chunk of the episode. So it worked a lot more for me kind of in that realm. And then, you know, it's now Wednesday morning, so it's been, you know, like 2.5 days. So I feel like much more distance with it now. And I feel too, like I feel better about it. Like I've kind of like, I've really calmed, you know, from kind of that initial, sort of rush on Sunday night. And I'm feeling good about it. And I agree with you. I think that they stuck the landing. This was, I think, their best finale episode, I'd say, since season three. And it really did kind of wrap up not only the season's storyline, but I think the past two seasons. I felt like the ending that they had with Keen felt like that felt very rewarding, I'd say. Like, it felt like a good sort of payoff to the two seasons worth of investment that they have sort of put into the character and sort of, you know, the presidential political storyline there. So, you know, I can say kind of with clearer eyes now, you know, it was, I think, very successful, even though personally for me, it was quite painful to watch on Sunday night. Yeah, but let's talk about kind of that first sort of like the first third of the episode, which picks up right where episode 11 drops off, where Carrie and Simone have swapped identities. And Carrie and Anson are kind of on the run, trying to evade the Russian police and sort of lead them on a wild goose chase and distract them long enough so that Saul can get Simone out of the country, which I guess was the plan all along. It wasn't the plan, I guess, for Carrie to get captured, although I think it was a very, you know, likely outcome that Carrie just kind of accepted because that's Carrie. But the identity swap was always the plan. The thing that was different from their original plan is that Carrie and Anson had to, like, they know that the Russians sort of right away will know kind of what's happened, and they have to evade them. I really liked this part of the episode. It was very suspenseful, kind of how they played the two things against each other, which is Carrie on the run through the train station, you know, with like the red scarf and the wig and the jacket and everything, you know, and how they contrasted that with Saul and Simone and the van at the airfield. And of course, they can't be let through because Bennett, I think, was like wanted for murder or something. So they have to call the president, who's now Warner or Beau Bridges. By the way, I think they changed his name. I think he used to be Marlon and they changed it to Warner. And I was like super confused because I think we talked about this like a few weeks ago in episode 10, maybe, or maybe it was episode 9. The episode where like Wellington was talking about like, I think it was episode 10 because it was maybe the one with the cabinet and everything. And they kept on mentioning Warner, and I was like, who is Warner? Is that like
me too?
I was like, is that one of the other cabinet members? I was like, who is that? No, they like legit changed his name. But that's okay. He's not Marlon, he's Warner, so at least we got that down, I guess. You know, he shows a surprising amount of courage because, you know, he kind of has Senator Paley there kind of at his side, like the devil on his shoulder, trying to like convince him, you know, that he has to kind of let Saul like rot out there in Russia. And then the moment where he was like, you can get the fuck out of my White House, I like stood up and cheered. It was like so amazing. But yeah, I thought that you know, that component or that part of the episode was really successful. And once again, they kind of stuffed all of the action scenes kind of at the beginning. But, you know, like, it was just really suspenseful because I kind of, like, wasn't sure what was going to happen. Like, I think I did know that Simone and Saul would get out. But, of course, the question's always, well, at what cost? And, you know, the whole sequence with, like, Max, like, in like as he was speaking to Carrie in her earpiece, and you know the Russians are coming through the door and she has the gun, but then she drops the gun, and then I don't know, it was really thrilling, and it sort of climaxes in that smile that she gives when she hears from Max that Simone is up in the air and they're out and she did it. Of course, then she's like carted off by the Russians. What'd you think of that first part of the episode, Gail?
I agree with everything you said. I thought that the action, both in Washington and in Russia, was so evenly matched and suspenseful.
Right.
'Cause you really didn't know. I mean, we had ideas going in where this would how this might shake out, but you know, in the moment, the way it's written, you don't know for sure Warner is going to do the right thing there.
Right. I thought that he might not do the right thing because it seemed so easy not to. And I think that's why, you know, like, I think that the courage he shows there in kind of sending Paley out, you know, and standing up to the Russian ambassador is important in the episode because we don't really know him very well, right? Kind of his involvement in the story up to this point has really been kind of as not like as a foe. He's more of like a foil, I'd say, to Keane. He just thinks about politics and everything a lot differently than she does. And he's very sort of level-headed. But at the same time, I think we were talking about this last week, like he is so upstanding, like he's so sort of morally aligned, you know, he has all of the courage and the integrity that, you know, we wish, you know, a lot of the politicians in the United States would have right now. But I get the sense that he's really just like, he's doing it not for the money or for the fame or whatever. He's just like so committed to like serving his country. So very similar to Carrie or Saul or any of those people.
I got that too. And I think that, you know, what's interesting for me in this is that, you know, Carrie, you know, holding the gun up in that room, you know, you have this, so much of the last few episodes have paralleled, you know, season four, and basically she's on the headset with Max, and it reminded me of Saul being on the headset with her and when he's about to be recaptured by Haqqani's men. And she's not looking for the easy out here. She very well could have, you know, like went down in a blaze of glory or something. Yeah. But I just, all of her choices to me in this episode, sacrificing herself the way she did, like, I'm just so proud of her. Like,
yeah.
So silly, but like, I really was like, she could have, you know, so many things could have changed. And, but you know, for the episode aspects of it, I thought that was a really clever twist with Bennett being the issue, not Simone.
Right. Yeah. That was clever.
Although he needs to keep facial hair because after, you know, when he shaves and he's back at, you know, the Blue Hand Group base, he's not as attractive looking. Like, Bennett, man, do the facial hair. Let's keep it. Okay. Season eight note. Let's do the facial hair. But I was like, I thought that was great. And I thought Doxy's face when he's sitting behind Saul, like, I watched it a couple of times where he's just like, here we go. Oh, shit. Like, he had a couple of great faces in passing. But I thought, you know, with Saul in that van, like, Saul is very much Carrie here, where he's just like, he's going to do everything he can to get,
but there's,
you know, Simone on this plane. Yeah,
there's that moment, too, towards the beginning of the episode when they're riding to the airfield, and it's kind of right after they've met, and Simone is like, so, like, what about Carrie? She's like, you know that, like, she came over the roof, like, to get to me. Are you just going to leave her here? And he just doesn't really say anything, and he turns around, and so he's like, right, like there's like sort of like an extreme close-up of his face, and you can tell I think he's very conflicted about it. Like, he's conflicted about the fact that he potentially has to leave her here. Either way, he was going to leave her there because I think the original plan was for Carrie and Anson to get to the
embassy,
right, to the American embassy. But still, it's this like, what it means to kind of leave her behind after she went to such great lengths to do that. It gives it it gives me sort of, you know, memories of season three when they hatched the plan to kind of leave Carrie out in the cold in order to lure Javadi in, which he was totally, you know, a willing participant in. And he didn't seem as torn and conflicted about it in season three as he does now.
I think I agree with that too.
Right. Like totally in season, and I mean, I don't know why that is. Is it like, I don't know why. Is it because Carrie, like, she has a kid now, like she has a family-ish, like I mean, I guess there's more at stake for her, but I don't know. It's interesting because it's kind of like, I think this season has been interesting because it is in some ways, in my eyes, redeemed Saul for me. Kind of seeing him in that last scene with Carrie this episode was like really fucked me up, just on like a Carrie Saul like emotional level. But in some ways, it also kind of redeems Carrie. Like, I don't know if this is the right time to talk about it, but everyone's watched the episode. Everyone like knows what it's about. But you know, this like the first two parts of the episode really underline, like you said, like how much of a hero she is. And we had a lot of conversations before the season started about whether Carrie is a hero or whether she's an anti-hero. And I've always been or slash like wanted to be on the side of Carrie being an unlikable hero. And I think that was underlined, you know, this season more than any of them. You know, she starts in kind of a questionable position and she goes to really uncomfortable and like disgusting lengths. You know, the Dante stuff was like not pretty. And it almost became obscured, like her sort of end goal almost became obscured. But like in these last two episodes, we see her go to almost like absurd lengths, I'd say, to save the country. And she just has such an unwavering belief in like what that means and sort of service to her country. Like at, there was a panel last week that sort of Claire and Leslie and Mandy and Howard Gordon did in Washington, D.C. And one of the things Claire said is that Carrie's North Star is like the devotion to the United States. Like that is the thing that is unwavering, like, and will always kind of lead her out of the darkness, I'd say, which I think is very poignant. And I think it does make her a hero. I think that, you know, when she kind of lets out the smile, which kind of turns into the sort of delirious laughter when she learns that they've been successful, it's contrasted kind of at that moment because she's also just been captured by the Russians. Her nose is bleeding. Like it's just such a, it's such an interesting moment, that at this time of kind of great triumph for her personally, I suppose, like she's also just been captured. And like, how dangerous is that? Does she realize kind of what that means at the, like in the moment, or like it's kind of like she's riding on the high of that. I just thought that was an interesting moment, but very cathartic.
Yeah, I going back to the Saul point that you were making earlier too, he is different with her this mission. I think he's been so upset with her for shunning that side of her life, mm-hmm. Which is why they've kind of been at odds, is I don't think he knew how to relate to her when she wasn't, like, when she was shunning her gift.
Well, this is the first time that they've both been back on the same side since season three. Like, mm-hmm.
Well, and that's because she basically had shut off her gift. So, I mean, if you look, well, in season four, like, he was captured, obviously, so it's a little bit of a different dynamic, but
what I mean, though, is, like, the same side, like, both been working towards the same end goal. In season four, he was captured, but he was also, like, he'd been pushed out of the CIA.
Right.
Season three was, like, the last time that they were working towards kind of the same thing, and we saw in the finale that year, the season three finale, when Brody dies, they'd kind of a little bit been at odds, like the entire or like the entire season, but kind of when push came to shove, like he was there for her and he like stood up for her and, mm-hmm. you know, tried the best that he could to kind of exfiltrate the both of them, even though that didn't work. And, you know, I don't know. It's just like.
But I do think that he's I think he's definitely, you know, I think Carrie's the one doing all the convincing this time with a mission and setting That's her true. Own limits.
Well,
and he's saying to her, like, well, why don't you, like, even mm-hmm. early on, like after she gets Dante and they're interrogating him, mm-hmm. he's like, go to Maggie. Fix this, do this now. Like, he is the one kind of saying this, you know, stuff to her. And when he goes to even ask her for to come on this mission, I think he's asking her for a very, you know, minimal role in that compared to how it turns out. And I think, like, even on that bridge, he's just like, we have to go home, we can't do Carrie, yeah. stop, you know. And she's like, no, I'm not going to give up, like,
she was
going to do this.
She was very much kind of in, I'd say, probably the driver's seat of her own fate, whereas in season three it felt like he had kind of, well, in season three we know that they came up with a plan together and then he kind of pushed it way too far without her knowledge. So it's very different. Like, it'd be one thing if, like, the plan all along was for them to go to the embassy or for Carrie to, you know, write another plane or something. I don't know. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I think he was really uncomfortable with the fact that Carrie was okay letting herself get captured. And
yeah, I agree with that.
And Simone kind
very
of
unsettled.
Yeah, and Simone sort of sussed that out of him, which is what we see on his expression. But anyway, so they're ultimately successful in terms of what the mission is. And, you know, there was that line last week, which we all sort of zeroed in on because it seemed super foreboding when Saul's like, well, how are we going to get the both of you out of Russia? And she was like, that's not the mission. The mission is to get Simone out. So, you know, she's excluding herself from the equation like that. It's like, I think kind of we all knew where it was going, but at the same time, like, that didn't make the ending of it any easier to swallow. But that's kind of like the first sort of chunk of the episode, and then the next chunk is heavily devoted to Keen, and kind of it takes place 3 days later. So kind of what's happened in the intervening time. Simone's back in America and she's about to testify before the Senate. Paley has been arrested for, like, criminally conspiring with a foreign power, i.e. Russia. And Simone's testimony basically is, it, I don't know what the right word is. It basically absolves Keen of kind of any wrongdoing, and she's sworn back in as president. And I think that, you know, if the meeting with like, there's a few things that happen because there's a major kind of shift that needs to be explained. And I think maybe that's why they spent so much time with her. It's like she's been on her heels for so long, you know, basically all of the last two seasons. And after she's sworn in, I mean, there's a little bit of like, okay, well, what now? And they, I think, clearly had in their heads that, okay, well, we don't want her to be the president anymore. She's going to resign. You know, we want her to give this great speech at the end. But they need to get her from the point of, like, she's been fighting for her presidency so, so hard the entire season. How do you get her from the place where, okay, she's finally won, you know, like she says to Wellington, like, we're finally the ones, like, with our foot on their throat or whatever. I think it's interesting that that's how she saw the situation. But, you know, the writers are tasked with the sort of the dilemma of, okay, well, she's now been sworn in, so she gets what she wanted, but how do we get her from that place to the complete opposite place? And it's kind of two things that they do. The first is the meeting with Senator Paley, who has been arrested. And the second is going to see her son, on the anniversary of his death. And those two things, I think, kind of crystallize for her exactly what her position is.
I would add one more thing in, though. Okay. I actually think the meeting in the Oval Office with Beau Bridges precedes the meeting with Paley. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who basically is upbeat and positive and trying to offer her this alternative that she's not having anything of, because she has just told Wellington to put him back into his dollhouse and close the lid. And so when he plants this nugget, and Wellington's kind of like, he's not wrong, Elizabeth, and they have this tender moment in the Oval Office, and she's like, well, why does it have to be me? Like, why do I have to be the better person, the bigger person? And I actually think that going into that meeting with Paley, I think it sets up her to maybe have that change of heart. And I think in that moment with Paley, her vindictiveness is fully realized.
Well, yeah, too, because I think it's interesting that, well, you're right. The meeting with Beau Bridges, I think, is important. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And he is wanting to be the bigger person. He has more of the sort of uniting spirit. Like, his whole idea is like, how about instead of just doing things all by yourself, which is what she wanted to do, she just wanted to like issue a bunch of executive orders, which basically means that the legislature is not involved. He's like, why don't we like reach out to them, because like it's a win for everybody, you know, because you're gonna look like you're sort of reaching across the aisle. They're gonna look like they're finally doing something. It's gonna be like the American government is like working the way that it should. And she was like, what? Like, oh no, I mean, I can't trust them with anything. But I think it's interesting because it just establishes how they're different. So Beau like wants to sort of unite the country in that way and sort of put up sort of a united front, you know, against Russia, where she's still in the mentality of us versus them, and I just have to do everything by myself because Congress is like too inept to do anything. And so she's really not the bigger person. She says, okay, fine, I'll think about it. And then in the meeting with Paley, she's again not the bigger person. He's literally begging on his knees for her mercy. And for her, like, not to do anything to his family. He has, like, a sick wife. He has two sons. He's, you know, he's basically been a public servant his entire life up until, you know, this point. And he says, like, please, like, you can punish me all you want. Leave them alone because they don't deserve it. And she spits in his face, which is very gratifying, right? Because...
Oh, yeah.
Because he's been such a snake the entire season, such a fucking snake. At the same time, also a useful idiot. So he's like, he's both a snake and he's also a fucking idiot. So it's like the worst of both things that you could be. And she spits in his face. And that moment, I like loved that moment because I was like, cheering for her at that point. But again, it does underscore again how she is like not the bigger person, and she still has like all these feelings of vindictiveness and like wanting revenge, and she could be sort of vindicated by Simone, you know, in front of the Senate. You know, all of sort of the active measures that the Russians have been attempting could come to light, but you know, there is always going to be people who are doubting her, and she's always going to feel like she's been wronged somehow. I think she maybe realized that she would always be sort of leading kind of on the defense, you know what I mean? Like she like she can never be on sort of leading from the front. She always kind of had to lead from the back and sort of couch everything that she said. And you know, that's not really the way to govern. And she maybe wasn't temperamentally fit to do it. And she realized that, and she resigned on national television. But before we talk about that speech, which was an amazing speech, I have like two quick things to sort of say. The first is an observation, the second is a question. So I just want to say the scene after she's met with Senator Paley, she's like riding home in the back of the car, and she's sort of driving past like all of the Washington sort of landmarks. I think they drive past like the Lincoln Memorial, and then they go past the Washington Monument. And that scene is so beautifully shot, but the music was so beautiful to me. I was rewatching it on Monday, and I was like, wow, the score was just so beautiful and so solemn and very reflective. I think it kind of underscored, you know, the reflection that she was doing herself there. So that's my observation.
Sean Callery was killing it all season.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've talked about the music quite a bit on the podcast. Just the choices for the closing credits and just the timeliness of bringing back certain pieces of music that were used in different situations throughout the seasons. I agree with you. I thought that was just a beautifully shot, beautifully
so pretty
edited moment. That music was phenomenal. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Like, the show isn't often pretty to look at. It's usually just kind of like utilitarian. But that was like, that was a really pretty scene to look at. I was like, whoa, like, damn, that looks like really fucking cool, like with the Washington Monument in the background and her face is lit up like in the foreground. I was like, whoa, shit, that looks amazing. Okay, so my second thing is a question. So she sees Senator Paley the day that she's sworn in, and the next day she's set to sort of give the address to the nation. But it's also the anniversary of her son's death. I think it might be like the 10-year anniversary, I forget. Anyways, but she goes to Arlington and visits his grave and just kind of sort of reflects on that. And I don't know whether or not she decided before then or whether that's what sealed it, whether or not she was like meant to resign. But I guess, like, why do you think that they included that? Her sort of story with her son was a big component of last season, because of course Brett O'Keefe and Dardal and all them had kind of planted the fake news story that he had basically like abandoned his troops in Iraq or Afghanistan. I forget where he was serving. But she really, again, had to kind of be on the defensive. And they hadn't really mentioned him, but it was a big component of her characterization last season. And then they brought him back again. What are kind of your thoughts on maybe why they went back to that story?
Well, I think for two reasons? We'll see if I get to, I might have a third, but I think for a couple of reasons. One is that in the car, you know, Wellington takes that call and he's asked that question, and her response when he asks her is, "My son is off limits. You know that," which was her
the question entire, being, well, the question too, to clarify,
did
was,
did you do this purposely?
Right. Like, did you choose the date of the address because it's the anniversary of your son's death? And can we, like, are we allowed to say that that's what it is? I mean, because maybe that was the reason that she chose it. But the question was, can we say that? And she said, you know the rules. Like, we're not going to, like, invoke him. So.
Right, which I thought was interesting because that really did harken back to season 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt to me that kind of tied who she was together with these, that changed, you know, where she, you know, she originally in season 6 when we meet her, we like her. She wants to be right. different. She wants to have a different agenda. She wants to be more calculating and cautious and go move away from, like, the drone strikes and this, you know, this kind of modus operandi that Carrie was against. Mm-hmm. And they were very much aligned. And in that, you see that part of that comes from what happened to her son and how she just wanted to be different. And I think to honor him, you know, she wanted to create real change with that. So I think in this episode, where, you know, they bring that up. I think it is. I think they plant that seed there because, you know, that's definitely her intention, having seen her in season six and her connection to her son that they had not brought up again until this last episode. And then when she goes to see him at Arlington, it's a powerful image. Those are people who have died in action. They're soldiers. They are, you know, patriots of this country who have put their life on the line. And in parallel, you have Carrie sitting in this Russian prison who's done just that for her. So for me, I felt like that was really powerful. And I think when she goes there, I think it kind of culminates in, like, is this who I am now? Like, this is so far from what she set out to do. She is so far from who she was at the beginning. And I think that moment of reconnecting with her son at his grave puts that all into perspective for her, which is ultimately, I believe, where she comes to this reckoning within herself of this, the right thing to do here is to, you know, resign and let the country be better for it.
Right. I think that we should draw the distinction. I don't, it's not that she didn't want to do it anymore. I think she definitely did want to do it, but realized that for the good of the country, a bold change was needed. And that is basically, like, that's sacrifice. So there is definitely sort of a through line throughout the entire episode of like real sacrifice. So Keane both sort of sacrifices her political career, her career overall, basically what she's worked her entire life for the good of the country. Carrie does the same thing, and so did Keane's son. So it does sort of tie all of that in together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that is. I think there's, and it, you know, we talked a couple episodes ago about the different decisions that Keane and Carrie were making and how there was some parallel tie-in to
We talked about that in episode 10, how, like,
in Clarity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. How Carrie made the
unselfish choice.
I was trying to think of the word we use. Yeah. Carrie made the selfless decision by sort of letting Franny go. At the same time, Keane is asked by Beau Bridges not to fire half of the cabinet, you know, or else he's going to have to invoke the 25th Amendment, and she does not relent. So she does not kind of do the selfless thing and sort of swallow her pride and swallow her indignation and kind of just do that, but she does do that in this episode, and I mean, you're right, there are so many parallels between Keane and Carrie, not only this episode but this season. It's so interesting because Carrie begins the season at odds with her completely. You know, she was on the outs with her at the end of last season, and kind of in the intervening months, like, that sort of resentment has only grown stronger, and she's sort of conspiring to take her down, I suppose. And it's so interesting. I think it's really clever how the writers, like, reversed that, and the way that they did that is by tapping into Carrie's patriotism, you know, because once she realizes that Carrie's the one who's been played and that there is a foreign power conspiring to, like, take down our, like, president, it doesn't matter kind of what her personal feelings are towards the president or kind of, like, what their past is. It's just the principle of the thing, and that's kind of what a patriot does. She sort of rises to the call of action. She takes a lot of unconventional steps to get there. Unconventional is a euphemism for illegal, but I mean, I just think it's really clever how, like, the second Carrie understood kind of what was at stake and what was at play and who was involved, it's like her loyalties shifted back to where we would expect them to be. I just think that's really clever how the writers did that this season.
I agree. And I think too, when you see, you know, Keen, when she comes back to the White House, after, you know, she's been vindicated basically by mm-hmm. Simone's testimony, she comes back to a hero's welcome.
Yeah, her staffers absolutely.
Are lining the hallway. They're cheering and clapping for her. She, you know, it's a lot of fanfare for her when, oddly enough, she's not the hero at that moment. It's Carrie who's to a very quiet, dark, dank place.
Yeah, so let's talk about that now. Yeah, let's talk about Carrie in the Russian prison. It was giving me a lot of season 3 vibes with Brody in the in the prison in the season 3 finale, kind of in that cage. Mm-hmm. You know, remember that?
And
it was giving me a lot of those vibes. But she's kind of befriended one of the guards. They are named Alexander. And, you know, kind of the first time you see her, she is sent to go meet with Yevgeny, who wants her to film a statement saying that the CIA has, like, basically planned all of this. And it was, like, it was all, like, a CIA ruse, basically. And she's like, no one will believe that. Like, why do you want me to film that? Like, no one is going to believe me. Like, it's clearly just going to look like a filmed statement. And his response is interesting. He's like, I don't need everyone to believe me. I just need to plant the seeds of doubt and then I can watch them grow. Which is so, it really ties together, like, the theme of the season, which is that everything that you think that you know is not real, and fake news and all of that. It just shows how his mind works, is that he doesn't need, you know, he doesn't need all of America to believe what she's reading. He just needs, you know, just like a tiny little seed of something there, and that's enough for him to work with. And of course, once he says that, then she's like, well, no, I'm really not gonna do it, because she gets again how he works and kind of what his mode of operation is. But it sets up this really interesting showdown kind of between them, where he, you know, once she refuses, he pulls out the pills and he's like, I know that you need these medications. I know that without them, you will go crazy. If you, you know, read the statement, I can make sure that you have, you know, all the pills that you need. And because it's probably going to be a while before you get out of here, so the option is read the statement and, you know, keep your sanity, don't read it and go completely insane. And after this season, I think that's another really good thing that the show did, because they showed the entire season what the value of Carrie's sanity is, because they really bring her down. Like, we experience in a very prolonged way, more than we have the entire series, what that actually, like, what does it actually mean for Carrie to lose her mind, and what are the stakes at play? After just kind of experiencing that psychotic breakdown at the end of episode 9, we know so clearly exactly what it means for her to stand her ground here. And I think that it was really smart of the writers to do that. And again, it sort of ties the whole thing together, which is another reason why I think the finale was really successful, is that it really ties, like, the themes and sort of the, like, all of the stories together, but not in a totally predictable way. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, do you have any more thoughts kind of on that first scene between them? And
yeah, you know? I do. I, you know what I noticed, is when it opens on Carrie, she actually has it's a pretty large room. Yeah. She's definitely not, like, in a cage. She's not in a tiny, like, you know, 6x8
right.
Cell or anything like that. She's made friends with this guard. When he, you know, he comes in, they're not shackling her. She's not, it's very cordial. She's very, amiable. You know, amicable too. Yep. She's, you know, he's like, all right, let's go meet Yevgeny. And she's mm-hmm. like, okay. You know, and she's following behind him. She's not trying to, you know, run for it. Like, it's just, there's a sense of like, okay, like, I've been captured. You got me. I will play along now.
Yeah. And yep. Hopefully yeah, this totally. Gets
fixed. She's waiting for this to be worked out. She must know, just with the nature of her job too, that there are definitely some horse trading going on behind the scenes that, like, I she knows think, that this is being yeah. worked out.
I think that she was never in fear for her, like, life. Like, I don't think she ever thought that they were going to, like, execute her or anything. It was a little bit just kind of, like, waiting for the show to get a move on a little bit. Like, all right, fine. Like, I'll play along with you and, like, I'll meet Yevgeny. And she can do that too because she won. Like, she right. is a little bit gloating there. She's just like, what do you want? What do you like need from me right now? Like, she feels I think she's kind of emboldened, you know, by the fact that she outsmarted him. And so it's kind of just like, dude, like, you lost. Like, let me just like
well, live she's out got a little bit of power here.
Yeah.
Because she knows, like,
she does have all the power. Well,
and some, and the she does until aspects.
He pulls out the pills, and then he turns the tables, and then she's like, "Fuck."
Well, I mean, she has the power in terms of, like, their country has just proven to be in cahoots with throwing the election and trying to damage her as a Keen as a president. So obviously, like, sanctions are probably being discussed in these 3 days, like, the, you know, and actually that's brought up with Wellington and Beau Bridges mm-hmm. With Keen about, you know, the Russian sanctions right. and what they're going to do. So, you know, they're obviously, like, the Americans have some clout here in terms of keeping her, you know, trading her, you know, for what, you know, maybe an ease on sanctions or a better package. I think with Keen maybe opting to go the Beau Bridges way and resigning actually probably makes the case for Kerry worse. Because they wouldn't have as much to trade. Like, if they were going to try to do this bipartisan sanctions and coming together unity in Congress, that probably takes a lot more time than the negotiating behind the scenes with Russia on these sanctions and the release of Kerry. On top of the fact that, you know, the Russians want this really high value asset back, which even Saul is concerned he won't be able to come through on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Yevgeny 3 days later kind of realizes, you know, all this, and that she is looking at months, maybe years. And I think that's when he puts his plan into play, although maybe it was in play all along with Alexander being nice to her and maybe giving her a false sense of security.
I agree. I think it was totally psychological warfare the entire, like, right. I think it was Yevgeny's totally like that.
Yes.
Well, I think it was definitely like that. I think he installed a guard and said, be nice to her. And, you know, when he asks her to read the statement, it's more a face saving move, and then he kind of pulls out the trump card, which is the pills, which he knows she can't live without. Of course he would know that, and of course he would know the consequences of her not having them. She will go completely crazy. Like, she will legitimately lose her mind. And it turns the tables and it shifts the power dynamic, because Kerry goes from having all the power, which is that at that moment, Yevgeny really needs her to read the statement as kind of a face-saving move. And she says, absolutely no, I won't do it. And he says, fine, feel free to lose your mind. I don't give a shit about you anymore. And, I mean, I think the stuff with the guard was totally planned from the very beginning, because if it wasn't, like, I don't know. I mean, because basically what happens is she sort of negotiates with Alexander to get him a pill, and she says, I'll do anything you want. And they share a bunch of, like, knowing glances where he's like, well, anything. She's like, yes, anything. And, you know, later that day he brings her the pill and she's so grateful, and she says, okay, well, you should come back later tonight. Obviously they have sex, and it wasn't until the next day. So it's not like Yevgeny came after she got the first pill, but before she had sex with him. It wasn't until the very next day that he comes and says that it was a sugar pill, and the guard that you think you have befriended and kind of won over, and that you think is maybe a little bit on your side, and that's being nice to you, he's been promoted. and maybe the terms of the promotion were for him to do exactly what he did to Carrie, by the way. Like, I don't know. And so now she really has no one. Like, she has no friends. And he's like, I hope that you can see your situation more clearly now. And I thought that was an interesting choice of words because it's exactly what she says in episode. It was episode 10. Yeah. And I don't know. It's just so interesting. Carrie spent so much time and work this season trying to get clarity kind of on her life and her career and, you know, being a mother. And she does get that by the end of episode 10. And we see it in last week's episode 2. She seems like very focused and clear-eyed about everything. And she has it again this episode up until that point. And then he totally strips it away from her. And, you know, once again, she loses that grip on her mental health, which is, for Carrie, that is, I think we saw that is the thing that is prevent, like, when Carrie doesn't have that, it's like her entire life crumbles around her. In the season, or the writers this season really showed what that meant and what the consequences of that were. It's like when Carrie sort of, you know, has all of her mental facilities, you know, available to her, she's a much different person. And I mean, we saw the extreme of that at the end of the episode, but I don't know. The scene where Yevgeny reveals to her that it was a sugar pill, I felt like was the culmination of the entire season and that sort of adversarial relationship between them. It's also the last time we see her before the 7 months later, and she's just been totally crushed and defeated because she's refused to give the statement and she doesn't have the pills anymore. And she tells Yevgeny to fuck off, and then she tells him to go to hell, and he says, no, I think that's actually exactly where you're going. And again, just sort of underlining the point that the road ahead for her is going to be horrible. And I think then she comes to terms with her situation there, which is that she's completely alone. She has, I mean, and she's about to lose her mind, and that's so scary. I thought Claire's acting in that scene was like tremendous. It was so, so good. And I could really feel Carrie's pain. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was, it was an incredible scene between them. It was so well acted.
Well, and too, like in that scene, he says to her, like, he apologizes to her in this like weird way where he's like, I'm sorry to play with you like this, but
yeah, like, he's really sorry.
Yeah, right? Like, he's like, but you need to see what your situation is. Like, do you, like, when he comes to see her.
It's almost like she was a little bit too cocky.
Right. Like, yeah. He knocked her down a peg. Yep. And was just kind of like, okay. Like,
I really do have all the power here, by the way. Like, you're right. A prisoner. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, like, we're not going to torture you. You know what I mean? We're just not going to give you your medicine.
Which is basically the same thing. Like, she's right, going to become so...
But it's like the loophole. It's like the loophole with Amnesty International.
Ill, yeah. It, like, she's going to become, you know, so sick that, you know, she's going to lose her mind, which is a form of torture. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so we see that. That's the last time we see Carrie, is when she, again, you know, she kind of learns what her situation is. And then we go to Keene and the presidential speech, and she decides that, you know, she's going to give it from the Oval Office. She sort of threw out the draft. She said, I'm not going to read from the teleprompter. I'm just going to, like, wing it. And Wellington's like, what the fuck, dude? Are you fucking serious? And then she does. And that speech that she gives is pretty short. It's like maybe 2 minutes long, but it's really powerful. And she talks about how, you know, she kind of recaps the sort of the deal of what happened with Russia and kind of how sort of primed America was for an attack like that, because Russia really homed in on the divisions, you know, that are brewing. And I thought the lines about how democracy doesn't die overnight. It's not like a coup or something where like the military is overthrown. Like it's not something that really occurs in an instant anymore. It's something that happens really slowly. I think the analogy she says, it's something that happens like twilight and you don't really realize it, kind of, you know, because your eyes are adjusting, you know, the entire time, and then it's gone. I thought that was really interesting because at that point it felt like Alex Gonza was like speaking to the audience. It felt like he was speaking to the American audience in that point through this sort of fictional president that he's created, which is, I think, my only beef with that is that it was a little bit like too on the nose. I thought the writing was incredible and the way that it was delivered was great, but the sort of meta, the meta sort of aspects of that scene were, I think, detracted from it a little bit for me. What'd you think of that scene?
Well, I thought she says something in it that talks about, you know, no single leader can save the democracy. Mm-hmm. But without a leader you can trust, no democracy can be saved.
Yep.
And that, I think that was one of the lines that was towards the end of her speech.
That kind of explains her decision, too.
Right.
Is that she knows that. I mean, because she has the other line. She's like, the second that I open my mouth, half of you only hear lies. Like, you guys don't trust me. It doesn't really matter. Because I think what Wellington was wanting for that speech is, I think what he said, it's like, this is your one chance to, like, reintroduce yourself to the American people. He thought that this would be a clean slate. And what she realizes is that there are no clean slates. There's always going to be, like, a major proportion of the country that just does not trust her, and it doesn't really matter, kind of, in the face of facts or kind of recent events. They just have an opinion of her and it's unlikely to shift, and she can't govern, you know, from that position, which is very mature of her and smart. I think she's totally right. I think that, you know, the situation parallels the current political sort of environment in America right now a lot. Not so much that it feels like they're, I don't know. I think the reason I liked the presidential storyline this year much more than last is because, well, first of all, it felt a little bit more relevant, but not in, like, it didn't seem like they were trying too hard. Except for in that speech, like I said, my one beef is that I felt like they were, like, talking to the audience a little bit more. It kind of took me out of it a little bit because I was like, he wishes that Trump would basically give this speech, right? But I don't know. I thought that it was a very well written speech, and it was delivered beautifully. And I like how at the end, kind of, they fade out to black, and it's kind of like the lights going down on her presidency. Well, you know, really.
Oh yeah, and I think literally, too, like, very literally. It's the speech that for all the talk about, you know, them trying to be prescient, that was obviously not prescient, that scene. Mm-hmm. But it was the scene we, as Americans, at least those of us who feel like we are in turmoil in this country, it's the scene we needed. It's like the hope and the spark of...
It's a little cathartic, and it's a little bit... it's cathartic, and it's also like a fantasy a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to happen.
It's never going to happen. This will never happen. I thought never, that was ever. Interesting. I was reading comments where people were just like, wow, it would never. I think it was on Reddit. I don't know why I went onto the Homeland Reddit, but I did. Just because I was like, oh, I think I wanted to know whether or not they kind of knew what would occur if someone who was bipolar had been without her meds for 7 months. Anyways, which I did. I did. Discover, because there were some people who were talking about it, but in the process of me sort of attempting to figure that out, a bunch of people were like, it's so unrealistic. Like, a politician would never do that. And it's like, yeah, duh. Like, that's the whole fucking point. It's like,
that's the point.
It's like, this is fiction. It's not a documentary, but it's also just kind of like, what if someone could do that? Like, wouldn't that be really courageous? And wouldn't that actually make her like a hero? I think it's interesting, you know, and I was reading this too, like, I think one of the successes of the season is that we were never sort of told whether or not Keen was good or bad. It's like we kind of went back and forth throughout the season, you know, and I think that was really interesting because it wasn't black and white. It definitely wasn't. In this episode, we see her do one thing at the very end that's extremely patriotic, and she seems a little bit self-congratulatory too as well. You know, she's like, if you know, if it will take kind of a woman to kind of like rouse the country out of this, then like, so be it. Like, she already kind of like, I think, I don't know, it's interesting because it's sacrificial in some ways, but I think in other ways a little bit she kind of maybe wanted the glory of making this decision that seems, or and that is very selfless kind of on the surface, you know. So we see her make this really sort of courageous decision at the end. At the same time, we also see her spit in this guy's face who's on his knees begging for mercy, and her response is to spit in his face. Like she's not,
well, those two things happen within the trajectory of her arc though, so I to me they're separate. Like,
but the character is complex. Like, she was never completely good, she was never completely bad, she existed in the shades of gray. I think that was interesting because it's like we weren't sure whether or not we should like her, whether or not we should trust her, and I think that was a success of the season. And you know, I give credit to the writers there for like not making her a caricature, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely think, you know, Saul calls it at the beginning, she is a woman who cannot rise above her own vindictiveness. And I think you see that come full circle then at the end when she does. So I think that's her trajectory throughout, and the culmination of that vindictiveness is when she spits in Paley's face, because he is humbly on his knees saying to her, you know, don't cut off my pension, please, you know, keep the insurance for the family or whatever he's asking for. Yep. And she just can't even satisfy, she can't even give him a word,
right,
an acknowledgement. Like, her face is so stone faced, and not in a stoic way, in a very,
like, fucking hate you kind of a way. Like, you are
very Medusa.
Like, you are vermin. Yeah. And will crush you. Yeah. And I think she probably would have. I was kind of wondering in that scene whether or not she would like give him like a pardon or something as kind of just like a way to move past it. And she did like the complete opposite of that. But I still stood up and cheered. When I figured out that she was going to resign, I think I figured out like halfway through the speech that this is what it was about. I was like so excited because I thought that was such a great twist. And we talked last week about whether or not we thought Keen would end the season as president. Well, I was like, well, I do think that Simone's going to get out, which would be good for her, but I also don't think that she's going to end the season as president. But I thought that they were going to bring back Wellington's love letter, which at this point seems like a plot device that they completely forgot about. But I much preferred the way that they did it, you know, allowing her a little bit of, or I think allowing her the dignity of that makes me wonder whether or not they're going to have a Beau Bridges in next season or not. Or whether or not, you know, they're going to.
Well, it depends on how far the time jump is. Because I think we're going to end up seeing like a teenage Franny. That's what I think. That's my guess.
They can't do too big of a time jump because then they have to mess with, like, then you have to contend with Carrie's appearance and her age, I think. Mm.
Yeah, anyways. But I mean, like, you could definitely go because
I think it's going to be 2 years. I think they're going to put us back into present day. It's going to take place in 2019 because right now they're a year behind. They're in 2017. All right. Okay. So it's been over an hour and we haven't talked about the last scene, which is the 7 months later part. So we saw Saul negotiating with the Russian ambassador. He had three names on this list. And this is like in the immediate aftermath, and he doesn't have that one prisoner, Goran, I think is his name.
Right.
And he's like, I couldn't get him even if I wanted to. And I think the ambassador is like, there are a lot of like really powerful men right now that are really upset. Either he says that or Yevgeny says that. But either way, the general like impression is that the Russians are not really in a mood to negotiate right now. They're kind of like, I don't know. It's like they weren't successful. They were like the losers in all of this. It's like
they have pie on their face.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So they're not really in a giving mood, I suppose. And so Saul is a little bit at a wall. He's trying to get carry out as fast as he can. It takes him 7 months, which I think sounds like an appropriate timeline. I wonder if that's like the fastest that these things can happen anyway. There's a lot of, I think, bureaucracy involved in like exchanging prisoners. And I think you're right. The switch in presidents probably didn't make it any easier. And of course, too, like the Russians, you know, it's almost like their revenge because they lost so spectacularly. It's like, why don't we just keep her on for a little bit longer? Though at the same time, it's not like she was giving them any valuable intelligence because she was in the process of losing her mind. Anyway, so we see them 7 months later. Saul is there. They're at the Russian-Estonian border, and he's there with the Moscow chief of station. And, you know, they exchange a few lines like, do you know kind of what shape she's in? Are we sure it's her? He's like, I'm 90% sure it's her. So giving us again a lot of parallels to the prisoner exchange in season 4, which I think was on much speedier timelines. I think it's interesting that Carrie was able to negotiate a prisoner exchange for Saul in like 4 days, and it took him 7 months. That's just a little interesting tidbit. But before you saw her, what kind of shape were you expecting her to be in?
Oh, once I realized she was captured, I was expecting her to be like full Brody. Like, you know how when you see him in episode 1 where he's like dirty and looks like he's coming out of the hole with the hair everywhere? I actually thought we were going to see the mirror image of that with her. I felt like we were going to see her coming out of like a hole or something. Mm-hmm. So on the bridge, she's wearing this really big coat. And
she's wearing like
kind of wild.
Yeah. She's also wearing like white pants and shoes, which to me says that she's been in like an asylum. Yeah,
for sure. Yes. And she just looks so like
disoriented. Feral, caged animal. She looks like she has no idea what the fuck is happening right now.
No clue. And she can't even focus or process. And
like she doesn't even understand when they sort of release her, that it means that she can like move away. And then the man who's like escorting her across the bridge gives her a shove, and she sort of stumbles forward, and then she looks behind, and then Saul's waiting for her like maybe 20 feet away, and she like runs straight.
Right. She's just running. She doesn't even know where she's running to, or she doesn't even recognize him.
She doesn't even know who he is. I think that's what we're meant to get out of it. It's so I'm sorry. Like, we're talking about it in very sort of analytical terms right now of like, okay, this is what happened and like this is what that means. But I think what I got out of that scene is just kind of the visceral emotion of like, holy fucking shit. Like, I can't even believe that this has happened, which is, I mean, I think I was like kind of okay with the episode. I'm glad that they showed her being like released back. I would have been I think even more of a mess if they had sort of ended and we weren't sure, you know, whether or not she was going to be released or not, like if we weren't kind of sure of her fate in that regard. So I'm like glad that they showed the exchange, but like, holy shit, nothing. I can't even, seeing her in that state and seeing her run past Saul and then she trips and she's sort of pulled up by all those men, and he looks at her and he's like, are you okay? Are you all right? And He says her name a few times and she has no idea who the fuck he is. I don't even think she knows what her own name is. She looks at him with these like wide eyes that are sort of glancing all around, like, who are all these people and like, why are they touching me? And it's very obvious she has no idea who he is at this point. And that is, I mean, seeing her in that shape for me was so distressing. It was so heartbreaking, like, to see her in at that, like, in that amount of, like, she is not who we know her to be. That's what really got me. I was like, that's not Carrie Matheson. She's lost herself so sufficiently that she doesn't even know who Saul is. It's like her oldest friend, you know. She, like, if she doesn't know who Saul is, like, fuck, like, what has happened to her? She completely lost her mind. I don't think, I mean, it's like we saw the psychotic breakdown at the end of episode 9, but that was like cherries compared to this. You know, it was like I don't even know how to articulate it clearly. I'm just like stumbling for words right now, but it really got to me after the episode. I was just like, well, first of all, I was like, what's the point of it? Because they're going to do a time jump. And so, like, I don't think that we're going to see, like, the immediate aftermath of her attempting to, like, regain her sanity again, because they're going to do, you know, they're going to jump forward in time a substantial amount. So I was like, okay, what's the point of it? And the second part that really made me really upset about it is, like, what we saw in that kind of the sort of disoriented look in her eyes as she was like searching for something that she recognized, and she was so confused and she was so damaged and not recognizable. It was like all of the fire had just been kind of like washed out of her. And I was like, well, like, what if the parts about her that I love, like, are no longer there anymore? And that's what made I like, that's kind of why I had a little bit of a breakdown. And like, if Ashley were on, she could tell you that I had a little bit of a breakdown on Sunday night, and Monday I was a little bit like in like an emotional hangover a little bit. But I'm feeling better about it now, because I think, you know, I think you had a more hopeful kind of position than I did immediately. I was much more in like a pessimistic space after watching the episode.
Well, we watch it differently. I mean, you really watch from that Carrie perspective, and you're very zeroed in on her emotional journey, and you feel what she feels, I think, a lot of times.
Right. It was a little bit like, what have they done to her? It was like, right. What the fuck?
And for me, I think I more saw it as like, for me, Carrie was so redeemed in all of this. Like, she's not a little bitch like Clint, like, rolling over to fucking Janet, of all people. You know what I mean? Like, and she's not a little bitch like Saul in season 4 when he's, like, crying about being captured again. She doesn't read the statement. And if you remember, Dar has to get the videotape from Haqqani so that no one ever sees that Saul was sitting there on a leash next to Haqqani during this statement that happened when he was captured. So for me, like, she is just the truest of all of the heroes and all of these men, and Keen, like, out of everyone who's making these decisions, she's the true hero here. She's the true patriot.
I get that, but the whole thing for me is, again, at what cost?
Well, and I think that's just what they're illustrating. And right, with this being one last episode or one last season, you know, the original story, Prisoners of War, which I can't pronounce the Israeli term for, it's like Hatufim or something like that.
I think it's Hatufim.
Hatufim, there you go. Is about these prisoners of war being released and their reacclimation into society, and how, like, while they were gone, like, they have to deal with, like, their children being raised without them, like, family members moving on. They have to deal with the fact that their stories don't sink and an investigation is opened up into their lives, kind of reopening all these wounds, and their relationship with the people left behind. Now, that's basically a lot of season 1 and 2 with Brody. But I do think, you know, Carrie, for me in all this, like, she's coming back having experienced kind of what Brody did now. I think she was always kind of sympathetic to him, but it'll be interesting to see how her mindset changes, you know, with that. But I think too.
So you think that they're going to tell maybe some sort of parallel story in season 8 where we are not sure whether or not Carrie has been turned?
No, I don't. I did think that. I did. Yeah. At first. I don't really think that's it now. Me because neither. There's no way she would ever be turned.
Well, I think logistically, maybe, it's like, how do you turn someone who's like lost their mind? Like, she doesn't even know who the fuck she is. So it's like, right. You can't really indoctrinate someone when they, you know, can't even tell you what their name is.
So but logistically.
The
dark spot for me was that we hadn't seen Saul and Carrie working together in so long that I was so into this little Blue Hand group of guys, her working with Saul again, being on this mission in Moscow. Like, I thoroughly loved every minute of that mission and mm-hmm. them working together, that I'm like, God damn it, why would they pull them apart again at the very end? Like, we, you know what I mean? Like, I was kind of upset about that, because I'm like, what the hell? Like, the bread and butter of the show is when Carrie gets to be Carrie and gets to be this intelligence officer, this badass. And so I really hope that in season 8 we get to see,
I think that's Carrie, what they're going to do,
working again yeah. with them. But, like, I don't know how they get her back into the intelligence world.
Well, I think it's the time jump. Through. Like, yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. It's like, what Alex Gonza has said, you know, and we talked a little bit about this. He said, first of all, there's going to be a pretty significant time jump between season 7 and season 8. I think it's going to be about 2 years. The second thing he says is that, you know, season 7 is really sort of, we're wrapping up the 2 seasons long story that we've told that was in America, and that was really sort of focused on like this sort of like Trump world political sphere, and we're wrapping that up, which I think they did. And then next season is really, I think he said, it's going to be a smaller, like, more intelligence focused story, and that they preferably want it to be set in Israel. So that to me says that it's maybe going to be something akin to like either season 1 or season 4, you know, where Carrie is overseas, or I guess it's really like season 4, where Carrie is overseas and, you know, maybe she is with Saul. I think they brought her so far out, and it just from a psychological standpoint of, okay, well, now how do they bring her back in? Because before it was always a question of, well, she's so far away from that ideologically, you know, like that's what we saw at the end of season 4 and the end of season 5. And she's not really like that. She's firmly in sort of the ideological sphere, you know, at least halfway through this episode, that you would exactly want from someone who is, you know, working for the CIA. But she doesn't, like, she doesn't know who she is. Like, she doesn't know who Saul is. She lost her mind. She went crazy in a more extreme way than we've ever seen before. And so really the question is, how do you, like, rehabilitate the character from that, and what does season 8 look like from that perspective? I guess I'm assuming that she's gonna like be a case officer again in season 8, because I think the writers have always like kind of just saw that as kind of, like you said, that's like the heart and the core of the show, is Carrie as this operations officer in the CIA, and Saul is her mentor, and like, what does it mean to be an intelligence officer on the ground? And so that's what I'm expecting from season 8. The question, I suppose, is just, what is the aftermath of as an experience as traumatic as that look like? And I think it might be like a combination of Brody in season 1 and what we saw from Quinn in season 6. I said this on the blog a few days ago, maybe. But I think that they're going to be going more for the Brody parallels than the Quinn parallels, just because I think that that to them is a little bit more resonant. I don't know if that's more resonant for the viewers, but I think the writers have always kind of seen that as like I think they'd be really turned on, I suppose, by this idea of like coming full circle in that way. Yeah. With Brody in season one and then with Carrie in season eight. But beyond that, I have no idea. They really, it sounds like they're gonna once again sort of completely, you know, wipe the slate clean, which is what they've set up with this finale. Though the question is, there's always emotional sort of ripple effects from that, and you know, which of the characters will we see again? You know, will she get to retain the Blue Hand group, and will we see any of them overseas? I certainly want to. Like, I really liked sort of the dynamic and the rapport that they all had with each other. I don't think that there's room for Sandy, though, because she's like a Russian expert, and I don't think they're going back to Russia. I think it's going to be set in the Middle East, but I certainly loved her.
Brought up a question. Do you think that was the end of Yevgeny's story, or yes. Do you think that maybe, and I think yes too, yeah. But with all that's going on in the news with the Iran deal, Israel, yeah. Syria, the Russians are very much involved in all that. So I could see a situation where maybe Carrie has been out rehabilitating and Saul comes a calling. like
he always does. Right. Yeah, but oh man, I don't even like, I can't even like think like how, you know, how season eight gonna open. They have to do, yeah. They have to bridge that gap in some way. They can't just be like, okay, well, like now she's overseas, you know, she's working as like the station chief or whatever. Cause you're like, what the fuck? The last time we saw her, she like looked like a caged animal. Like they do have to connect those dots in some way, so I'm kind of wondering if we're gonna get like maybe a flashback episode or something like that.
Well, season two, when they open up the first few episodes, she has had that meltdown and right. ECT yep. after the Brody stuff, and you see that she's gardening and cooking and sleeping and exercising, and she's just very much a more subdued kind of bird with clipped wings.
Yeah.
And you see her kind of build back up into the season three force that she eventually becomes. But even when she's in Beirut, like she has that breakdown.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it's not something like that, yeah, where maybe. She's just, you know, a little off kilter and not herself, and you know, it's hard to say. I mean, she wasn't in good shape going on this mission to begin with. Is
like, if I'm I think the thing about season two, when Saul came knocking and was like, I need you to come, and she was like, why are you doing this to me? Like, I put all of that away. And you could tell that she really, like, I don't know, like there was tension there, because she kind of like resented him for calling. At the same time, she really wanted to do it. So it's like, if I'm Saul, Carrie kind of being fired from the CIA, and I mean, because like in season two, he was really backed into a corner. It's like the asset that she went over to meet with would only meet with her. Like there was literally no one else they could call. And he was, you know, he didn't want to do it. Carrie's experience at the end of season one pales in it's not in any realm similar to her experience at the end of season seven. So if I'm Saul, I think that like, how would I ever find it in me to do that? So I think they are in a little bit of a dilemma, because from my perspective, it certainly seems like Carrie was in no way fit to ever be in the CIA again, based on kind of, you know, where she was at the end of the season. At the same time, we know it's eventually going to happen. So it is like, how do they bridge that gap? How do they connect those dots? I mean, I have no idea how they're going to do it. It will probably...
It's like the cleanest of all slates, though. I have to say this for the show.
It is a clean slate. Going into it,
it's crazy how clean the slate is, because...
Except for Carrie's psychological... Except for her mental state. Yeah, except for right. her, you know, headspace. Yeah. Anyways, for those of you who are wondering, you know, I was wondering, okay, what would happen to someone who is bipolar, who was in like the midst of a manic episode and went without their meds for 7 months? And the answer, well, there was like a few interesting things. A few people weighed in on it. Both responses were that it would probably devolve into schizophrenia, which I think is a little like, that's kind of how we saw her, you know, like she seemed like that. It is a very sort of rapid spiral, though. And so their hypothesis was that 7 months is a really short period of time to go from someone being bipolar to someone being schizophrenic. Although we do know that Carrie has bipolar one, which is the one with more mania than depression. And, you know, she does have elements of psychosis, you know, in her diagnosis. But they also said that, you know, 7 months is a really fast time period for that change to happen, but they were like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Russians were like giving her like experimental drugs or something like that. When you combine it with the conditions that she was probably being held under, like, she didn't, like, when we see her face, it's clear that she's been crying. Like, her face is really round and very swollen a little bit. It doesn't seem like she's just been like it's a major contrast from, you know, for example, when she was in the mental hospital, like in season 3, like those weren't great conditions either, but she was also like in a better physical shape, I suppose, than what we see there, where, you know, like you said, like her hair is all scraggly, her face is swollen, it looks like she's been crying, like there, I don't think that the conditions she was held under were humane at all. So,
well, and I think Yevgeny says that, he says, you know, like, you're gonna end up in a asylum going crazy, and because he says to her, like, do you like the exercise here, do you like,
I think that she was probably without human contact for the entire time, which is, I think so, maybe too. Why she was so like, what the fuck is happening to me at that point.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, probably deprivation.
She also didn't like say anything.
She probably
too.
Was in a tiny room. Yeah. She probably had no exercise. Because, you know, people are like, oh, is she pregnant? And I think actually Jesus pretty Christ. Sexist. That they just assumed that because she's a female, like, and she has a round face, she's pregnant. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. People can eat cheeseburgers, okay? Like,
well, she but could I have think been she's assaulted.
I think it's to show, well, and I think she's pregnant in real life, but also I think that it's to show that she hasn't gotten the exercise, that she has not been, you know, privy to like reading books, and she's not had this idyllic time there. Like, she's stuck in a room and left alone to her own.
I think the key word is breakdown. Deprivation. You know, she was deprived of everything that you know, that humans she really need to live. Yeah. Like, she was deprived of her medication, which made her go crazy. I think she was probably deprived of like sunlight. I think she was probably kept in solitary confinement the entire time, basically in a padded room, where she like went crazy. And I think it's interesting how she was imprisoned in two ways. She was physically imprisoned, but mentally as well, kind of trapped in the prison of her mind at that time, which is always kind of what the show has been doing, I suppose, with her bipolar disorder, is showing how that is both a gift and a curse. And they really, I think this season showed more than anything how it just works against her in so many ways. And, you know, they flipped the mentality that she's had in the past, that it gives her superpowers, and they kind of flipped it on its head, and they showed how really it's like her greatest weakness in this line of work. It's one of those things that people exploit. It's what happened to her in season 4, and then once again it occurred this year as well. So I mean, I don't know where we're going. I think, you know, I feel better about Carrie. You know, I don't think that she, I don't know, I feel like I was really terrified after I watched on Sunday night that they had perhaps stripped the essence of who the character was away from her kind of in those 7 months. I don't feel like I think that that was kind of like a knee-jerk, oh shit, what have they done reaction. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think that it's not going to be an easy road back, and I think season 8 is going to be super painful.
Yeah,
but that's not like a bold prediction. Redemptive
art. Yeah. I do. I think and it's Homeland, so it there's never really truly a win without a price.
Yep.
But I think for them giving us this disaster of a version of her in season 7 at the end, I'm hopeful that we get a better version at the end of season 8. I really am. I think that, although I said that after season 5 with Quinn and look what they did in 6, but I really think that I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful on a few fronts, maybe naively so, but I'm hopeful. I think season 8 will carry's a hero, and there's nothing that can really change that in my mind. So, and I don't think they want to change that in people's minds either. I think they want to show the cost of war. It's something they've always done. So it's not going to be an easy road. It's not going to be easy for anyone involved, but I think Carrie's going to go out on top. So I feel good about it. This is the bubble I'm living in now. This is who I am now. Holding on.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to sort of wrap it up, is that in some good finale, they nailed the landing in terms of the season overall, but Carrie pays the ultimate price, mm-hmm. as she always does.
Yeah.
It's a heavy sigh.